Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, dear listener. This is Ken, your RV navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot. And this is our big before Christmas edition.
And we have a list of Christmas presents.
Of the podcast. This is our show for December 2025, episode 248.
Now, can you imagine 248 episodes? And how long ago did we start this podcast?
We're coming on 20 years, right?
20 years. Oh, so we're going to do a little bit of retrospective here. That's a long time to be a podcaster. And how did we start this podcast?
On a whim.
On a whim, yes. Were you whimming?
No, I was one of the uninformed, as always. When I make jokes about how I always had to explain to people what podcasts were in those days, I also have to admit that you had to explain to me what a podcast was. And even after you explained it, I thought, who is going to want to listen to us? And here we are with friends literally all over the world who listen and occasionally meet up with us.
And, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are unknown. Well, every once in a while, we run across somebody who has listened to us for years. They send us an email, or like on our trip where we ran across a couple that we interviewed last month, and we had no idea they were out there listening.
They call themselves lurkers.
If you're a lurker, well, maybe it's time that you let us know. You know, we don't charge you anything. The podcast is free. We have no ads. We don't do any sort of promotions. But we do deeply appreciate your listening. And I would like to know if you're listening and you know, your situation and what's going on with you, because we like to make that connection, and that's what keeps us making the podcast.
And we want to say that the excuse of you don't want to infringe on our time is not a valid one. Although I must admit, when it comes to Facebook, I'm a lurker too. Especially those of you who are at TGO because of things that we said about TGO and haven't made yourselves known to us, there's absolutely no excuse for that. We want to meet you and shake your hand and find out about your travel adventures and get to know you. The podcast community has gotten bigger and an important part of our lives.
Of course, we are now in a new venue for making our podcast.
Our second home.
Second home.
It's not my home. We bought the home for the motorhome, who needed a place to be that was a little more out of the elements than a gravel parking lot in Chicagoland.
So we bought this house, and we now have a nice parking place for the RV.
Undercover,
and this will be our winter home. And we don't have to live in the very small confines of the motorhome, which I think if you live for 6 or so months in a small confinement, it is a little bit confining.
People who are full-timers do it.
Yeah.
We were getting in each other's way. Is that what you were saying?
Well, it's nice to have a bit more space. This is quite a lot of an upgrade, I would say, for us.
It's a home.
But this is the first time we've made a podcast here, because this is really only the second week we've been here. So we have ended our Alaska adventure, and all went well after the breakdown that we had in Alaska, which we talked about probably last month. And now we have made the trip back to Chicago.
With the motorhome.
With the motorhome, where we spent a little bit of time. And then we drove it down here to Florida, because I didn't want to have to winterize it. Well, and we didn't want to have to drive in the snow and cold and rain and that sort of stuff. It's just not the thing to do if you have the opportunity.
Don't have to.
Yeah, so I didn't have to winterize it. I lucked out, frankly. The weather in Chicago was very warm this fall.
Until the day we left.
When we did have to drive through a bit of snow in the Smoky Mountains in the Asheville region. So we took 3 days. And we stopped in our favorite town in South Carolina.
Rock Hill? We have different favorites.
Yes. Well, we stopped in Gaffney because that's the home of Freightliner, where you get your RV repaired. And we didn't really need any repairs, but we had the usual checkup. And I always tell them, you know, if there's something that needs to be replaced, please tell me and we'll take care of it. Last year we had to have airbags and we had ball joints put on. And this year we had a air leak in our system, and so they fixed that. You know, you don't have to do, on these big motorhomes, you don't have to do maintenance all that often. We have a 20,000-mile oil change interval, so that really took care of all of Alaska. Several of our fellow RVers had to stop for
along the way
to get the motorhome or their truck, the oil changed and general maintenance of their truck. But we just did it on the way up last spring, and then we did it now in the fall.
You gave me the impression that it really, as our dear president says, passed with flying colors. When we go to the doctor these days and have a blood test or an x-ray or whatever, they always say, oh, your results are really great for your age. So we have an aging motorhome too, and I'm always glad that most of the things that happened in Gaffney were pretty routine.
Right. Although we are having a little bit of work done down here in Florida. Once again, we have a jack issue, but nobody really cares about that. This month, we're spending Thanksgiving on the road as we travel north back to Chicago.
To our home, our real home.
And then back down here for the big New Year's Eve, December 31st show.
And we've already gotten
the champagne.
The champagne from
a
listeners.
Gift.
So we have ready to be lubricated
the bottle,
and do our best.
I don't know. Everybody seems to always enjoy the New Year's Eve show. We'll try to come up with some great ideas for the show, but it probably will be warm, unlike other years. You know, podcasting for 20 years, and nobody knew about podcasting. 80% of the podcasts organized by Apple, and that has changed dramatically. And I have a very interesting article, if you're interested in a little bit of history about podcasting, this article is worth reading. And of course, you can find any links that we mention on the RV Navigator podcast webpage called rvnavigator.com, and you can click there and then click on the link for the specific episode, and all of the links will be there so that you can see these articles and read them for yourselves. But before Serial, what was Serial?
That was that NPR series where a murder was investigated to see if the person who is still in jail, I believe, because of that murder was really the guilty
right.
party.
In 2014, that podcast premiered, and it rocketed the podcast idea into people's minds because so many people watched it. Before Serial,
no, they didn't watch it. They listened to it.
So thank you. They listened to it. Only 30% of Americans ever listened to a podcast. Today, over 70% of Americans have listened to one, and 55% are monthly consumers of podcasts. And certainly we do by a wide margin. I listen to numerous podcasts every month. However, podcasting has changed.
I think the podcast got a real boost in the arm during COVID when a lot of people who were making their living as performers of some sort, either on the web or on TV or in wherever, when nobody could put on their show, everybody moved their show to the podcast arena. And it saved some people's sanity, and it gave us time to get to meet talents that we might not have time to discover
yes.
otherwise. And these days, it seems like anybody who has any claim to fame for any reason has a podcast. I don't know how you would ever keep up with even the ones you're really interested in.
So Serial in 2014, in 2014, we were already 8 years old.
Yes, we were. We were ahead of our time.
Propelled the growth of podcasts as a medium. The podcast app on iPhone was only 2 years old at the time. So, and Apple, as I said, held 80% of the market. And now, video has really taken over. And YouTube has become the number one place where podcasts are hosted. Now, I really have a hard time with podcasts as being video. Does that bother you?
Well, because it takes your undivided attention.
Well, but most of the podcasts are just people talking like we are.
Right.
And do people want to see us talking like
this? Not for very long.
I don't know. I don't watch many podcasts. I mostly just listen. And that's really what I prefer.
It's so nice to have it while you're doing other things. Our generation used to listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Customize the things that you're listening to and spend your time the way you want to spend it.
Right. Our podcast has not changed in the last 20 years.
And neither have we, right?
I still use the same software. I still upload it to the same servers. But the world has changed around us, and I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to do this. I'm afraid to say that our listenership has gone down. From our usual 10,000 people, it's gone down some. But guess what? I don't really know that for a fact because our web hosting service has messed up our analytics and I have not got a handle on getting new statistics, so I don't really know how many people are listening at the present time. But, and of course, the other issue is streaming versus which was not available when we started.
And things like TikTok take people's time up, too, from their phone.
Oh, other social media?
Right.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Right.
But YouTube, which now is the number one in podcast distribution, estimates that over 1 billion people watched podcast content on its platform every month.
So even though it's video, you still call it a podcast?
Well, that's my question. I don't know. Obviously, video is popular in certain for certain things, you know, if you're doing a style show or you're doing makeup or something, then that would you'd have to see it. But for us, I don't see us doing video. That would add quite a lot of expense because we'd have to do makeup and we'd have
Oh my God, I have to comb my hair.
Because we can sit here in our shorts and we would want, though, to do what our audience wants. And so we're going to put the question out.
Oh, no.
Do we want to have a
video?
Would you listen? I mean, our goal was to provide you with something to listen to as you travel. And we've heard from many people that they do that. We listen to podcasts as we travel in the car or in the motorhome. And that was our goal. And we have stuck to that ever since. But, of course, our audience is king, so if you are interested in having a change, let us know, and we will definitely keep that in mind. We'll have a big 20th anniversary celebration in February.
Is that when we started, in February?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, more champagne. I have one experience to share with you that happened while we were moving the motorhome from Chicagoland down here to Florida. As you all know, many RVers have dogs and pets, and that's one of the reasons why they like to RV is because you can take your animals with you. So it's certainly not uncommon to run into somebody who is out walking a dog. And we came to a campground that we were going to stay at for the night, and I walked to the office to check in, and a woman was walking perpendicular to me, walking her dog on a leash, and this dog, for whatever reason, dogs have their own ways of thinking, was leaping up in the air and barking hysterically and yanking on that leash. And even though it wasn't a big dog, he had a lot more oomph than his owner did, and they moved closer and closer to me, and the dog bit me. The bite in and of itself was not that much, although I bled, but what was very upsetting to me was the fact that the owner of this dog had never vaccinated it, and she had not owned it for very long, and I was left with the dilemma of, have I gotten rabies now, and what to do about it. So I want to mention that for those of you who are dog owners and dog lovers, even though your dog is very well behaved 98% of the time, he needs to be under your control 100% of the time,
yeah.
Especially when you're around
me. And you didn't do, I mean, you had just stepped out of the RV and walked 25 feet ahead of us to go into the office, and I was still in the driver's seat,
right.
And I just was observing.
And, of course, this incident happened on a Sunday afternoon when you can't get any help, blah, 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 blah. I think I'm fine. The wound was pretty superficial and healed readily. I'm not here to cry on your shoulder, but I do want to mention again to people who have pets that they are living in a space with others and everybody needs to be well-behaved.
Yes. And the owners need to be in control, that's for sure. And I think she thought she was.
She was trying.
Yeah, because she had the dog on a leash.
Right.
But was one of those
ones.
The dog
had more energy than she did, and she couldn't slow him down.
Yeah. And we have stayed in touch, the owner and...
Oh, you're getting into more of the story.
Well, they did follow through. I mean, I was pleased with the response from the campground, and when that's important to recognize.
In my mind, the responsibility for this dog rested with the owner.
Yes.
But the owner had not only neglected to vaccinate him, she apparently was one of those people who are living in campgrounds these days because they can't afford to live in more traditional housing, and she had no money, she had no credit card, and the campground owner stepped in and assumed responsibility for it all.
Right.
And took the dog to get it vaccinated, which he was worried about for other people who are in his campground for sure, and paid for having it observed for 10 days to see if it had any other signs of rabies. It was pronounced healthy, thank goodness, and also offered to reimburse me for the medical expenses that I had when I went to urgent care to get whatever help I could on a Sunday afternoon. So I was grateful to the campground owner for assuming that responsibility, but I think it was on the owner.
Oh, no question about it. And I think we were also pleased with the response from the police.
That's right. One of the other residents went to urgent care with me, and he called the police while we were waiting for an hour and a half to be seen. And they came and interviewed me, and somebody from the county, some head police person, phoned me to let me know that they were releasing the dog and that it was found to
so
be okay.
So the follow-up has been good.
Yes.
So in all, the experience
a good experience.
Was serious, but it was appropriately handled, and we are appreciative of that.
So just in case this ever happens to you, my niece, who is a veterinarian, said, not only do you need to look for the rabies tag on a collar of a dog or any other animal, but you need to ask for paperwork because the tags last for years and the shot is supposed to be given annually, and a lot of people don't bother. So if your dog comes anywhere near me, you better have that paperwork handy. Because that
we
is
now
your,
know what to do.
That is your responsibility as a dog owner.
You know, we've had this problem with the air conditioners. We are contemplating getting rid of our air conditioners in the motorhome. We found out that the Penguin air conditioners are no longer made by Dometic, and they haven't been made for quite a while. So what's going to replace them? If you are interested in getting your, or if you're having trouble with your Dometic air conditioners, you might want to pay attention to this, because there is going to be a big shortage. Some people have actually bought ahead and said, I'm probably going to lose my air conditioner, so I'm going to buy one just to keep it on hand. Furrion and Coleman are both looking at viable options, and I don't know where this is going to go, but as somebody who has air conditioners that are
limping,
we'll have limping, to stop. That's a good word for it.
We'll have to stop following the 70s and aim at the 60s.
Oh,
Canada, so here we come.
That's true, though. We didn't need them all summer,
we
so
didn't
we, haven't,
how bad they were.
We haven't really paid any attention. We haven't actually turned them on since I don't know when. But when I turn them on, I'm afraid that we're going to have problems, and I don't know exactly how I'm going to get them replaced, because the issue is there's no standard mounting on the roof. And, of course, these came from the factory, and if you stuck with the replacements that were exactly the same as in the factory, then you had no problem. But now that
you have a problem.
Now that you have to change manufacturer, and even if you buy a Dometic, the new ones are not the same standard in the mounting and blah, 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 blah. So
fun times ahead.
Yes, indeed. All right, on to Christmas gifts.
Okay.
Every RVer is looking for interesting things to give for Christmas. And one of the things that I would suggest, if you don't watch Josh the RV Nerd on YouTube, of course, another podcaster, but he has a ton of great videos, and he has probably surveyed and given a tour of your rig if it's fairly new. And so if you're looking to buy one, he has a lot of great walkthrough videos. And he's, of course, on YouTube, and I have a link to RV Navigator website. But He has an interesting topic this month that says, don't waste your money on these RV accessories. So many of the Christmas lists that you will see will have RV accessories, and most of them, or many of them, are just not worth getting.
According to Josh.
So as our Christmas gift to you, why don't you take a look at Josh, the RV nerd, and he seems to give pretty unbiased advice, like the RV navigators. Although he does work for a dealer, he goes out of his way to be fair and balanced. So this is one of the many topics. And another one he has that's very good is lubricating your slides. And I just watched that part of it this morning, and it was quite interesting. And you actually learned something. Another suggestion.
Well, I think we talked to you about this before, but we still are very fond of our portable reverse osmosis water maker. Remember, ours was called the Jimmy, and one of the reasons
from Amazon
that we picked it was that it fit under our counter in the motorhome.
Yes.
But we like it so much, we have moved it into our new house and are using it here as well because it works quickly and easily and is a real workhorse. We put a lot of water through it.
Yeah, the Jimmy has worked out well for us, but we picked it primarily because of its configuration. It had two pitchers. It had a nice opening on the top, and it was you could load it from the front, which we consider to be important. So take a look on Amazon. I don't think there's really a lot of difference between them, but Amazon has a whole series of reverse osmosis, and this is the key, the reverse osmosis RO water makers that are portable. If you don't have RO, you don't have pure water. There's just no question about it. So,
and judging by how gunky the water that gets expelled by this gizmo is, Sure, I'm walking around with a multitude of years of gunk sloshing around in my system we did this.
I had to clean out the supply chamber because it was so sandy.
Oh, that was in Alaska.
No,
it was
yesterday.
Here too?
Well, everywhere.
Oh, my God.
The thing gets just so crapped up as the supply side. When the water just sits there, there's sediment in it. And this is filtered water.
Yes.
Filtered by the in our RV often.
Municipal inspections.
So I'm really shocked at the water. So, and you'll need to buy also at the same time a TDS, a dissolved solids meter, which costs about less than $10. And
you bought it at the hardware store, right?
No, I bought it from Amazon. Oh. You dip the meter into the water, and it tells you the amount of dissolved solids. I think we've mentioned this before, but the EPA says less than 500 is a good number, parts per million or whatever. And our one at home is regularly the dissolved solids are in the 700-800, and down here it's over 900.
Wow.
So when it comes out of the RO machine, it's usually in the five.
Single digits.
So that tells you, I don't know about the other pollutants in the water, but that just getting rid of the dissolved solids is a good step. I also found out, doing a little bit of research on this, that they are now making tankless under sink water makers that use RO. And so this might be a nice option if you don't have a lot of space under the sink. And so it has the spigot that goes next to the faucet on your kitchen sink. And it sits under the sink. And it's, they say, I haven't seen it yet, but it's about the size of a 2-liter bottle of soda.
So appropriate for an RV.
Well, yeah. And I think
if you could put it in.
The problem with that in the past has been that it couldn't make enough water quickly enough. So you couldn't just open it and fill up a jug because it didn't make water that quickly. But apparently the new ones are much more, I don't know, they have much more volume that they can put out. So more on that later, but if you find out something about it, let us know.
If you are going on an RV trip or wondering where you should go on an RV trip, we would endorse the Wild Sam Guides. These are travel guides to either specific cities within our country or areas within our country. Very detailed, including items that you might never have heard of before
That
would be interesting to see once you go to an area. Or if you want to invite someone on your Christmas gift list to go on a trip with you, give them a Wild Sam guide to the area that you would like to visit, and maybe you can plan a trip for the summer.
And the one that I looked at that was interesting was going around Lake Michigan. And that's kind of a quintessential Midwest camping trip to travel around one of our lakes, like Lake Michigan. And this guide took you step by step, not giving you recommendations of campgrounds, but, you know, things to see as you travel around in a given area. So these guides, and there are lots of them, they're not free, which tells me that they're probably a little bit better quality than you might see otherwise. So once again, Wild Sam Guides to RV Trips, and take a look at the link on our website for the exact details about that. Now, the next one is a bit controversial.
I never would have gotten it if we weren't going to go to Alaska, because we have done better and better with Wi-Fi with our cell service, and we used our other Wi-Fi system less and less, even to stream movies.
Yes.
But when we went to Alaska, I was persuaded that we needed a Starlink, and it worked very well. Everywhere we went was easy to put up. Many other people had them, too. They really have swept the RV market, I would say.
Right. And they have a number of different plans so that you don't have to break the bank. Ours is currently on standby, which means that I pay $5 a month and get very low-speed service, which is fine because I'm not using it regularly. But it just kind of keeps it active. And if we have some sort of a disaster or something that the internet goes out in our house, we can activate it on the fly. So I consider Starlink to be something essential, and they have a number of different plans these days. They've been virtually giving away the Mini so that you can have it available to you and not have much of a hardware expense. And even, you know, the hardware expense is cheap when you consider the fact that you're going to be paying by the month. The basic plan for 50 gigabytes is $50. So that's a pretty reasonable investment for internet. I can definitely recommend it. It's easy. And because we watch them launching the satellites here on a regular basis, there are 8,500 satellites now in the air, which means your connectivity is virtually assured no matter where you are. People run it through the roof of their motorhome. So there are all sorts of options for getting Starlink and making it work.
It would appear that if they are malfunctioning in some way, they're quickly replaced.
Yes, and it just works. You just set it out and it works. And so there's no real technical issue to setting it up other than plugging it in and plugging it in. You don't even really have to aim it. It's pretty much aim it at the sky and you're in good shape. As long as there are not huge forests, it works pretty well.
I think some mountains might get in your way too.
Not really.
But they didn't in Alaska.
No, they didn't for us at all.
Connected easily.
Another Christmas present is a Segway scooter. You like to transport yourself around or go places in your campground?
Sure, I jump on my bike.
A bike is big, and it's hard to transport and often quite heavy.
Yes.
So a friend of ours just bought a Segway scooter, and he paid less than $1,000 for it. Or, of course, an e-bike is nice to have, but it goes 45 miles at 15 miles an hour. So you can really go quite a ways on a scooter, and it has the benefit of being able to collapse
fold it down
and put it in your trunk or in the bed of your truck, or you don't have to hang it off the back of the RV. So that's could be an interesting option for your friendly RV person.
That's quite a Christmas gift. You're going to be very good for Santa to bring you a $1,000 gift.
I'm offering a wide variety of choices. The tire pressure monitoring system, absolutely essential. And there are some good ones out there. Mine has a nice color screen now, and it tells you the tire temperatures. And it's been pretty reliable on Alaska and back. So if you are in the market for a TPMS, you want to definitely think about it for Christmas. It's a great gift. A little bit of maintenance. You have to put batteries in it once a year. But other than that, it just works.
It seems like they've gotten more dependable and
I would
reliable,
say so, yeah. Although
they used to be.
Yeah, but it requires you to put a sensor on each tire. And now for the piece de resistance in terms of Christmas gifts.
That'll fit in a stocking.
Fit in a stocking. Wouldn't you like to have a multi-tool carabiner in the shape of Sasquatch. On Amazon, and the link is available on our website. Hiking, camping, travel, and outdoor survival kit, all in one nice little gizmo that has a wrench, it has a screwdriver, it has a can opener, it has a cord cutter, bottle opener, flathead screwdriver, Phillips head screwdriver, all those things in one little gizmo that fits on your waist. And if Sasquatch is not your thing,
it comes in other shapes.
Like
a Christmas tree, a panther.
A Christmas tree carabiner. Yeah. Whoa.
You could hang it on the tree before you leave for your trip.
Oh, that would be exciting.
Decorate your tree with carabiners.
They're cheap, right?
Yeah.
Not too expensive. Yeah. So this is a nice little gift. Everybody likes a multi-purpose tool, and this one is one that will get a little bit of humor involved.
And may help you out in a pinch.
So after coming home from Alaska...
And Canada. We were home for 2 whole weeks, and we went back to Canada.
And why did we do that?
Our friends said, what are you thinking?
Yes.
Luckily, we didn't have to drive back to Canada, because where we were going is a wonderful location that you cannot drive to. Churchill, Manitoba.
Churchill? Where the hell's that?
On Hudson Bay, and it's the location where you go to see polar bears gathering before the ice forms so they can get on the ice, go out to sea, and catch seals for dinner.
So this is a very unique experience and one that's been on our bucket list for quite a while, because polar bears eat seals.
Primarily.
And to eat seals, they have to go out on the ice, and they stalk them, I guess. I don't know exactly how it works, but they're able to find enough seals for them to live their life.
Just like other bears hibernate in the winter, polar bears have an eating schedule that does not match ours at all. They spend months eating virtually nothing and then pig out big time when it's seal catching season.
Well, it's kind of like the salmon.
And live off the fat of the land until the ice forms once again. And of course, in these days of climate change, there is less ice and it's out there for less periods of time, and the polar bears are struggling.
So Churchill is one of those towns that is very small. I think less than 1,000 people live there full time. And they had kind of a heyday when they were an industrial port. And the railroad went there, and they shipped products. But it has kind of fallen on hard times.
When the St. Lawrence Seaway opened, it was a much better route for many of the ships that used to stop in Churchill. And business went way down, and all the companies that used that port left. So the town almost died. And what really almost killed it is the only way to get to Churchill at that point was on the railroad or in a plane. And the railroad went defunct, and they couldn't get any supplies and couldn't travel in and out themselves. And they were at a really low point where many towns just say to hell with it and everybody moves out.
But ecotourism is something that has become more and more popular. And of course, ecotourism is where the local community supports the animals and the
environment,
and invites tourists to come and observe the animals, but not
a way that would injure them or harm them,
right,
in any way.
So they have taken great pains to keep the tourists and the bears apart. And they have...
And nobody gets hurt.
...created this whole business of ecotourism, where people come and observe the bears but don't interact with them. And so it's become quite a business for them. And when we were there, there were over 10,000 people, tourists, who were there to observe the bears in nature, and not in any way do they promote any sort of interaction with the bears.
The bears are there because the Churchill River flows into Hudson Bay at that particular spot, and the river has fresh water, Hudson Bay has salty water, and the fresh water freezes first. So the bears, who are very hungry at this point, having not eaten all summer, all gather there and wait for the ice to form so they can move out onto the sea and look for the seals, which is what they like to eat. It kind of was similar in my mind to the salmon fishing that we had just seen the smaller black and brown bears doing in Alaska. You might have seen on in the media that they had a big contest for which is the fattest bear. And yes, polar bears are at best twice the size of brown and black bears. They're incredibly huge. And when they're not eating, they lose 2 pounds a day. Can you imagine that?
Pounds? I would think it would be at least that.
Yeah.
So the polar bears congregate here for a very short period of time, not knowing exactly when the ice would form, but waiting for it to form. And as soon as the ice forms on the Hudson's Bay, they disperse and go out and start hunting the seals. And so that's the end of this tourist season for Churchill. So it is for 7 weeks and ending basically at the end of November. We went in mid-October. And, of course, we are going to a place that is known for being cold. And we certainly experienced some cold. But that's the deal. You go in the cold, it could be snowing. But it wasn't snowing for us. Quite a different experience in terms of the weather.
Now, these hungry animals sometimes come to town, and that's not good for the people who live in the town, but they certainly do not want to harm the bears in any way, so they have worked out a way to coexist. There are people who are paid to wander around the town with, they look like guns, like they're going to shoot you, but they have flashbangs, and they usually scare the bears out of town. And the people who live in town during this time period are told not to lock their car doors or their homes, because if a bear comes to town and no one has scared it away, it might be interested in you, and you need a place to run to ASAP to be safe from the bear. And they also have a big community center where many of the kinds of things that you and I might do outside on the street in our town, they go there and socialize and have their school there and their retirement community there, away from the bears. The other unique feature that they have is a bear prison, where if a bear is a repeat offender, they catch it and put it in jail for up to a month and don't give it anything to eat. Prison is never fun. Then they anesthetize it and take it on a long helicopter ride to another part of Manitoba and let it go. So no bears were harmed in the process of this tourist adventure.
So as tourists, you are there and they take extreme measures to make sure that you don't have any one-on-one experiences with bears. So you're not allowed to go out at night. They take you on a bus, even though you're going only a block or two for dinner. So everything is controlled like that because they don't want you to have a bad experience. And in all honesty, there have been bad experiences
for the locals,
in the past,
mostly
for the locals primarily, because they go through such extreme safety measures for the tourists. So everywhere we went, we were in a bus. So it wasn't exactly a taxing sort of a tour. And it used to be the case that the local dump was a very popular place for the bears. But because they're being ecotourists, they decided that they would close down the dump and take care of the garbage other ways so that it didn't attract any bears into town. So there's really very little reason why the bears would come into town. But we fly into Churchill on a charter flight, and then we...
From Winnipeg.
And we could have driven to Winnipeg. It's directly north of Chicago, about 700 miles, but we flew to Winnipeg too. And then you do the tourism in a Tundra
buggy.
And the Tundra buggy is about, we had about 16 people on board, and it's very big tires, and of course, if you would like a picture of it, we'll be glad to share one on the website. But you spend the days driving around the tundra, which is all around, looking for the bears that are waiting to go onto the ice. So they congregate here for a very short time before they go out onto the ice.
The area where these buggies drive used to be a military installation, and so there are sort of roads there. They're not very well maintained anymore because they don't really need to be. These tundra buggies could drive up the side of a building if they had to. They have such big tires. But they keep us nice and safe and kept us from damaging the tundra further. And if the bears wanted to come close to us and check us out, they could come right up to the tundra buggy window and peek inside and see what we were up to. It was a thrilling experience.
And that's exactly what happened. The tundra buggies have windows that come down so that you can take great pictures, which of course is one of the biggest reasons I was there. And they have a porch on the back so that you can walk out and actually be out in the outside in the open air, and then, you know, use your camera as you need to. But you're at least 6 feet off the ground at this time, and there's no access to the ground, and of course you don't never get out. But the bears can come right up to the vehicle, and they did. Which was quite interesting. I mean, we were very excited to see the bears up close and personal, and it did happen for us. And I don't know if it happens on every tour, but we got some great pictures. We were probably less than 10 feet from a big bear, but in a very safe environment, because like safaris in Africa, the animals don't think of you as anything but just part of their environment, and you're just something that's there, and you're always there, or these buses are always around, and even though they have motors and stuff, that doesn't seem to scare them away because they're used to it. And the same thing happens in Africa when you're driving in these jeeps and you're following animals that are stalking other animals, and it doesn't bother anybody. So that's really a nice experience. So we felt like we were watching the bears in a very natural environment, and they were just doing ordinary things like
sleeping.
But there were mothers with cubs. We saw them in the water. They were just swimming in the water because they are big-time swimmers.
Yes. Didn't they even call them the largest
aquatic
land
mammal?
The organization that we traveled with is called Natural Habitat.
NatHab.
And they have a website, of course, if you want to pursue it further. I would say this was not a particularly economical trip, but the special arrangements that were required to make it happen and keep everybody safe, you could easily understand why the tariff was high. They gave us very warm coats to use and high boots in case it snowed while we were there. In our case, the snow hadn't come yet, and really took good care of us.
Yes, I felt the NatHab did a good job, and we're doing a couple more NatHabs in January. So NatHab specializes in these ecotourism types of trips. It was a complete trip, including 3 meals a day, and because there was no place extra to go. And if you're on a time-sensitive vacation, then this one was only 6 days. So you spent 2.5 days actually viewing the bears, and then there were other interesting things to see
in the
and
area.
Do, and some lectures and things, so we know a lot more about the bear habitat and how the situation came to be. And we were looking for other animals, too. The Arctic hare.
The ptarmigan.
The ptarmigans. So you do see a few other things, but a lot of the time is spent just viewing and looking for the bears, because you have to... They have to drive around in order to find them. So that's a lot like a safari, except that it's cold and you're looking for just bears. Whereas on a safari in Africa, you're looking for all sorts of animals.
One night we were lucky enough to see the Northern Lights.
Oh, that's right.
This again was kind of an ordeal because first the town rangers had to go out and secure an area
because
that
the
we
bears
could go
come out
to,
at night.
Where the bears were not. And then we drove there in a bus. And when we got out of the bus, we weren't really allowed to go maybe more than 10 feet away from the bus,
yeah.
Which was good enough because we were looking at the sky, and there it was in its glory. This is not the time of year when those lights are visible because it's mostly cloudy, so we were lucky to do that. And to put in a final plug for Churchill, they do have a special season where the Northern Lights are viewable many nights of the year, and that's the time of the year when Ken and Martha will never go there in January and February because it's very cold.
Because we just did the temperature here at the end of November. We checked the temperature there, and it was like 12 below zero.
Yeah.
So it has changed dramatically since
and
we were
there. And the other natural delight that is featured in the area, you see it by going to Churchill, is in the summertime when they told us that literally thousands of beluga whales come to that area, give birth, and nurse their young. So that's another good reason to come up there and see how real life is in the fall.
So Churchill has three nice tourism events that you can go to, and NetHab will take you there on any one of those three. And they're very interesting tours because you get to see the outdoors and enjoy the wildlife in its natural environment, which is actually very cool. And we enjoy that, as we do down here in Florida, where we get to go out and watch the birds and other animals, because this is a very natural, wildlife-y area, too.
Right.
In some places.
They are beginning to feel like old friends. When you see the sandhill cranes and the spoonbills and the vultures and the egrets that are commonly available here, it's a thrill. It never ends. When I was a kid, I used to love to go to the zoo, but these days I really prefer to see animals where they live, and I feel so lucky to be able to do
that. And it's always
a
crapshoot because you never know what you're going to see or who you're going to see, and that's why we went to the bears. They said, we don't guarantee you're going to see bears. And then the first couple bears we saw were probably half a mile away,
little
and so there were little dots on the horizon. As a matter of fact, even with my long lens, the first bear we saw, I could not see it with my naked eye, and I put my zoom lens in on it, and I couldn't see it even then. And our guide picked up my lens and took a couple of pictures with it, and it was only when I looked at the pictures that I could see the bear. It was so far away. And I was thinking, oh.
I came all this way and paid all this money.
Spent all this money, right?
We did not leave disappointed.
We did not leave, exactly. So we saw probably 20, 25 bears.
Hard to
not
say.
Together, but
all polar bears look the same.
Yeah, to us. So but we saw some interesting behaviors and some
pairings,
good things to see. Yeah,
that
pairings
changed and mingling and then solo ventures.
So this is something we can recommend. And you can only do it, as we mentioned, October and November in any given year. So you can plan ahead and do it next year or some other year because the bears are there every year. All right, so now we are about to head back to Chicago here at the end of November.
Return to polar bear weather ourselves.
Oh, yes, it's going to be cold. And we're going to do the Christmas stuff, but we will be back here for the grand New Year's Eve show, as I mentioned. And we will be seeing you maybe in a campground. No, we won't be driving the motorhome, will we?
No, we'll be here with the motorhome.
So never mind. But if you're down, if you're down in the Florida way, come and see us, and we will
at the great outdoors.
At the great outdoors. Otherwise, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And thanks for listening to us, even though it's not on video.
And send us some comments, and also download the calendar.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about the calendar. Yes. What is it this month?
It's actually from Churchill.
Perfect.
Perfect, but it has no bears.
Okay. But then you know what it looks like.
It's a wonderful picture, as they all
are. As always.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later. Bye now.